Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
I always look forward to the launch of a new Call of Duty. Like, it's like a perennial event in my gaming life. Like, I look forward to the middle of November and playing this Call of Duty game. It rarely lasts very long, but I get kind of a kick out of it that I don't really get for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I guess it's like what Madden people think of, like, Madden every year.
Yeah. And I'm not proud of that fact, but I do it. But I'm hesitant to pick up Ghost because apparently it's dog butts. So I just played a little bit of Black Ops 2 to see if I even still have the taste for it. And it was literally like 40 seconds before someone told me that I smoke dick.
Well, you do, so it's fine.
I don't even understand how that, how physically that would work. Do you know what I mean? Unless you're talking about like artisanal dick smoking, like you're making jerky or you're tanning it somehow.
Oh, that might be it, actually. Like at a Renaissance fair.
Pretty much anything can be turned into something you smoke, right? So, I mean, really it's a matter of acquiring the dick and then hollowing it.
Well, humans are like, what, like 98% water? Like, I don't think we're like smokable. I think there's probably maybe hair.
No, you could dry it out.
Sure. And then like cover it in a resin, a thick surfy resin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you could just grind up the whole thing and just like smoke it like hashish.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Like, would it have any kind of hallucinogenic effect?
Right.
I mean, what if that's how you gained a man's power? And maybe this was like, maybe this guy was trying to help you, and he was like, smoke it.
This was the original plot of The Highlander, and for obvious reasons, it was it hit the cutting room floor.
Justin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the generation.
Whoa.
My name is Chris Proplant, and I know the best thing that happened between October 21st, 1985, and today.
My name is Ross Rush, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in sports entertainment, entertainment sports, and esports. But this week, we're not talking about any of that. We're going to talk about video games.
Is that not esports?
No.
It doesn't land.
I mean electronic sports like holograph chess.
Yeah.
And cyber bikes.
Still kind of a game, though, isn't it?
Tron discs.
Mm-hmm. Still game-like.
Game-ish. Mm-hmm. It's an electronic game. It's different.
Okay.
This week we're going to talk about our best. We're going to send this generation off in style. The next time we join you, believe it or not, we'll be like one day away from, or 2 days away from the new console generation.
No, we'll be right upon it. And like, will we even know? Because I won't have a PlayStation 4 in my hot little hands. I won't be playing one until the day it comes out, until Friday. Justin, I think you're there too. I think you're part of the hoi polloi.
Yeah. Right.
Plant and Freshick, I think, will be the only ones elevated to premiere status.
You will have seen us exhausted by 12 straight hours of playing PlayStation 4. And I'm so sorry that we are going to do that to you.
Guys, pray for Polygon.
Pray for Polygon. Mojo.
That's all I ask.
But we're not here to extol the virtues of this next generation of consoles. No. We're here to talk about our favorite memories from this console generation.
I guess I'll kick it off.
Okay, all right.
Is that
okay? Yeah.
Is that cool by you?
Yeah, I think so.
So my fondest memory, and I hope that we don't scare off everybody right here, was the first time I saw the Wii console. That tech demo, do you remember that? When they were like, hey, look at this piece of plastic. Oh my gosh, you can use it to play basketball with your television.
I remember there was a very... There was a very quickly mounting Like, it went from absolute horror to holy shit, this is the future. It started like, oh my god, they're making like a light gun only console. Like, we all thought it was just going to be light gun games.
Right.
And then that's absolutely what it was. No, it was light gun plus.
But it was such a positive memory for me because at the time, I think that was when I was in London, and I didn't have a video game console with me, and I had spent some time away from games, and I just didn't feel that jazzed about it anymore. And I saw this thing, and I remember watching with my roommates at the time who didn't play games at all, and them being like absolutely amazed. It was like they were seeing a magician in real life, and they could not believe it. And I didn't work in games press yet, so I wasn't cynical about a press briefing. Like, I was just like, oh, of course, this will work exactly as they say it will work. Why would they lie to me? Yeah. This will be perfect. This will be the future. And just being totally, totally shocked by it.
There was a very forgiving gradient from, like, the announcement of the Wii and then the release of the Wii. And I don't remember the Wii announcement press conference. Like, I remember a little bit, and I remember sort of that slow realization.
Is that when they announced that it was called the Wii?
I think it was
Dolphin. Revolution. Revolution. Dolphin was GameCube.
I don't know what came first, the hardware or the name, but I feel like they delivered on a lot of those promises. Maybe not so much Red Steel, but, like, you know, Wii Sports, like, that experience held
up. It's certainly one game.
The first party stuff.
It's five games. but I feel like everybody was, like, sort of, they felt like Nintendo sort of achieved what they had done. And even though they didn't iterate on it especially quickly, like, that was enough to sort of keep that system going for, you know, that system didn't have a price cut for 3 goddamn years.
It's amazing. It did so well. I remember, like, I don't remember the announcement either. It doesn't really ring any bells. But I do remember the first time when I actually played one. It was at that E3 when they first showed it off and made it hands-on. And it was, like, I think, like, the day before, the night before E3 was going to open, and they had a bunch of press, like, walk through their booth. And I'm, like, watching people look like idiots. And then I put my hands on it, and within 10 seconds, I'm, like, my mind was blown. And I don't think I've had that sort of experience with a video game since then.
Yeah, because I can remember being at the Kinect behind closed doors when they let some people touch it after that very first one was Project Natal. And, like, being pretty blown away by this idea of, like, touching a gas pedal in the air with Burnout Paradise, which is one of the tech demos. And being like, whoa, but then, like, immediately crashing into a wall. And they're like, oh, don't worry, it's going to be totally fixed. This will work on every racing game. Don't worry. Right.
Don't worry.
Yeah. And I didn't feel like the Wii didn't need a lot of that don't worry stuff. It was like, yeah, this worked.
It was a silent 30 seconds of awesome.
And like, because it wasn't, like, for the time, it was pretty groundbreaking. But, like, when seen through the scope of, like, even technological advances a year later, like, it's not, it wasn't really reaching for the stars.
No, right? It was like just a game design thing. That's all it was. Right. It was, like, brilliant.
It was a game design thing, but they weren't trying to do, like, a whole lot. Like, it had a few gyroscopes, and it had the pointer and the IR sensor that was a little bit wonky from time to time. But I feel like they mostly fulfilled the promises that they made, which is why I think the Wii U has been so disappointing, because I do remember that console's announcement and that crazy reel they put up where, like, you put the gamepad on the ground and you hit a golf ball off of it into your TV. Like, fuck you. You haven't done any of that shit.
You know, didn't even come close. It's so interesting with the Wii is that I think it really, like, we talk a lot about technology being disruptive. And I think that
the most disruptive technology that's ever happened within a console generation.
If you look at how this console generation was set up, it looked initially like this would be the generation that was all about becoming a set-top box. And it would be about online gaming, and it would be about set-top boxes.
I think was even a little bit too... I think the original was, this shit's going to be so powerful because it's got cell chips in it. Fuck you, Xbox. You ain't got cell chips? I only play cell chips because that's how hardcore a gamer I am. And then literally 2 years later, it was like, well, fuck. Like, they don't have chips, and they're doing really, really well.
It just turned into this dragon that the generation spent the rest of itself chasing. Like, it suddenly was caught off guard, and I think it really derailed a lot of plans for, like, where the 360 and PS3 would have evolved to.
Yeah.
And probably forced them into some areas that they weren't prepared to explore, because make no mistake about it. I mean, if there's no Wii, there's no PlayStation Move or Kinect.
Yeah, the weird thing about it for me is I feel like it really was a magic trick in the end. Like, in that way that the Wii didn't actually do the things that you thought it did. It didn't really have motion controls that were doing these things. They just designed the perfect piece of software for the limitations of this thing that they had created.
I would argue that it got a lot more robust and a lot sort of closer to the original vision that everybody had for it when the Plus attachment for it came out, because the no console has ever had a better swan song than Skyward Sword was for the Wii.
Stop it.
You don't. No, because stop like it. That's really? Sort of that yeah, definitely.
God of War was the swan song of the PS2. You don't think that's a good swan song?
It's pretty good. But this like that promise of like you can fucking swing your sword and it'll move exactly how you move it, your arm in the real world.
Brief segue. Do we all remember the Miyamoto demo when they were first showing that off on stage?
Oh, and God.
Yeah, because
and
busted. That was the absolute worst.
Oh, my God.
That was so a terrible, sad. Terrible, terrible E3 for them.
I think if you look at this, if you look at this generation, like the real success stories, I think are obviously the Wii is the biggest story, but if you look at, I think the biggest surprise from this generation, it was the music game trend. And I think that both of those are centered around, not around cutting edge technology, but around play experiences.
Yeah.
And I think as we go into this next generation, I think Sony and Microsoft would do really well to remember that the things that captivate people and can really build the sort of like fervent demand and heat are play experiences.
And playing with others. That's the other thing that those two had in common. Which mm-hmm.
You guys are kind of chomping my flavor right now, because
that's a good segue.
Oh yeah, go on.
My favorite experience. Are we done talking about the Wii? Like the Wii.
I had one memory that I just wanted to share before we leave the Wii.
Yeah, please.
This is my favorite experience with Nintendo and the Wii during this generation. Was being at the round table for the first old school Super Mario they released on the Wii, and asking Miyamoto a personal question about his family life, which is a huge no-no because he freaks out and Nintendo freaks out and everyone in the room goes silent and you're not supposed to do it.
What did you ask him?
I don't know. It was something dumb. And so I don't get an answer. They literally just are like, okay, next question, and totally cold shoulder me. Then we go to play Mario and I'm playing with somebody else. Miyamoto walks up and takes the controller from the person that I'm playing with, and no joke, he runs over to my character in-game, picks him up, throws me in a pit, and then laughs, and then does it again, as if to make it clear that I was being thrown in the pit.
You definitely got on his bad side, which I
didn't know. And then he walked away. That was it. That's
a pretty great experience. So to keep this really fluid segue talking about music games going, my favorite experience from the current generation was sort of the rise of the peripheral-based music game. And I know that Guitar Hero launched on PlayStation 2 and sort of kicked things off in that generation, but I feel like it didn't really reach its full apex. And boy, howdy, once it did, it burned bright and fast like a dying star until Rock Band was released. Because some of my fondest gaming memories, I think ever, and I don't know that this will ever change, is being an early adopter of Rock Band and Rock Band 2 and Rock Band 3, and having that be like, no kidding, from the launch of Rock Band 1 until I moved to Chicago in 2010, like something I played constantly every time my friends came over, like a few times a month, having parties based around playing this game that, like, I don't think there's been a game that has been deserving of that, really, since Rock Band. It really is some of my favorite time I've ever spent gaming. And it was sort of the first move that I had into this idea of casual, party-friendly play.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I definitely had that same connection to Rock Band in those games. And it's interesting because you compare it to the Wii, and it's similar in that it is sort of, again, like a magic trick, because it's like, you're not playing guitar. Dude, get with it. You're not playing guitar. But because of the timing, because of the way the controls felt and the way it synced up with the music, switched in your brain flipped, where it felt like you and your friends were this legit band. They actually had musical talent. And yeah, that was awesome.
The games were really good. None of this would have been possible, I think, if the games had been developed by another developer. And you can take a look at whatever the fuck, Band Hero or Guitar Hero 7 or whichever.
Right.
I think what was the first one that brought, like, the Activision drums and...
Well, Neversoft...
Rock Revolution, right?
Start...
No, gosh.
No, Christ, no.
Neversoft took over Guitar Hero, and there was definitely, like, a pretty significant drop.
No, I know, but then they did release a Rock Band-esque game. I'm just trying to remember. They definitely did Band Hero, but I think there was a Guitar Hero 4 or 5 that you could play with drums or something.
Guitar Hero 4 World Tour, I think it was.
And it wasn't especially great. It wasn't very good. I think the reason that Rock Band succeeded was because it took the stuff that you and your friends had already learned playing Guitar Hero, so it had that familiarity into it. It had drums for people who wanted a little bit more challenge to the stuff that they already knew. And if you had, like, no fucking idea what you were doing at all, you can sing. Because, like, everybody can understand that. Like, everybody can grok the concept of karaoke. Yeah. And then it wraps all that around in, like, a really well-put-together game with great mechanics, like the big rock finish from Rock Band 3, where, like, once you reach the end of the song, everybody just has to, like, lose their minds and then hit the one final note. Like, that's fucking great. So that's super clever stuff.
Yeah,
that I don't think any other developer would have had the cleverness to design that way. There's what? Also, like, all the character customization stuff you could do. Rock Band 3's emblem editor was, like, my favorite thing ever. You can customize tattoos and then put them on your character wherever you want. Like, it was just such a great, it wasn't a cheap cash in like so many attempts to capture the casual market were. Like, they were fucking good games, man.
Yeah,
like, cared about the music.
Same,
you know, that back then it was about the music.
All those people were in real bands. I mean, a lot of the harmonics team are musicians,
and I think a lot of that carried over too, because I it didn't really set my world on fire as much as Rock Band did, but those Dance Central games are the same way. Like, it's not just stupid dancing. Like, there's really, really great mechanics, and they evolved so so brilliantly between sequels, because Dance Central 3 had shit like the make your own move, like, dance off challenges, and the freestyle flashcard challenges. Like,
yeah, it was really smart. As someone that doesn't play instruments at all, I have always wondered, so when you extend a note on, like, a guitar, are you supposed to just slam on the whammy bar, like, in all instances?
As hard as you possibly can, yeah, because it makes it sound better, and you get more star power that way.
Got it,
yeah.
Okay.
I think my favorite experience was I bought Rock Band with a couple friends. We camped out outside of Best Buy to get it at midnight, and then we found out that Walmart had started selling it at, like, 8 p.m. the previous day, so we just drove it to Walmart and got it and literally played it until the sun came up. And we did that for probably a week straight, just, like, getting together, playing the game. And we were doing I was doing a college radio station show back then at, I think it was, like, 11 o'clock at night to, like, 3 in the morning or something like that. And the week where we got Rock Band, I brought it in, and we just played Rock Band over the air and had that be... had that be, like, the music that we were playing.
Hopefully you were good.
We were so good. And I did Sabotage, and I forgot to censor myself. And I said, fuck, on the radio.
No, college radio.
No.
Because I was trying to play guitar and sing at the same time, or, like, show off. And I was like, I got this fucking thought. And as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, Jesus.
So then, did, like, all 16 listeners write in, or?
Whew. Those fines, man, are no joke. For a public radio station. Public owns those airwaves. They don't want to hear you saying fucking on the air. Neither does the dean of the college. No, it's not a podcast. I didn't say I can sing fucking all I want here.
My favorite Guitar Hero memory was going to an event before E3 one year. And it was whatever that last Guitar Hero was, when the series was very clearly on its last legs. And Activision rented out the entire Nokia Theater. And it was like maybe 20 people in it, which made it already super awkward. And five devs came out and played like six songs, a really long set. And the game just looked bad, and they kept playing, and they weren't especially good at their own game. And they were like, okay, I know what this is. They're going to have like everyone else come up and like, you know, see what it feels like to be on the Nokia stage. No, they shut down the stage, and they're like, oh, what should we do? We have the venue for another 2 hours. And one of the people's like, well, I have a DVD. So they just played Zoolander for the next 2 hours.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
And wasn't like, that a Judges Week thing where you were, like, trapped there and couldn't leave?
Yeah, and
the
we
buses...
couldn't leave. So we were just
That's
like...
terrible.
So, and they ended up playing Zoolander. Actually, it was longer than 2 hours. It was four because they played Zoolander twice through. Because after Zoolander ended, we were like, oh, what are we going to do now? And they're like, I guess we could hit replay.
It is funny the second time. Noticed a lot of stuff.
I would be remiss if we let this segment go on without me mentioning my dark horse like favorite rhythm game, and that was the DJ Hero series.
Oh, that game!
Those
so
games
good.
Were so goddamn good, especially DJ Hero 2. I think the soundtrack I liked like a lot better than the original. It had that fucking fix up
Mookshot.
Oh my god, so many good jams! Like I listened to that soundtrack probably more than any other game soundtrack. But another like really well put, I think that was what Freestyle Games, which yeah. I don't think is yeah. in long, no longer with us.
Well, Activision gave up on that game so quickly that you could buy both like two turntables for like $15 a week yeah. after that.
I should try and find it because man, so I really, good. Really like that game. It was one of those games where like you felt even more so, I would say, than Rock Band, unless you're like messing with like expert pro drums or whatever, where you actually felt like I'm mixing the shit out of these two songs. And every opportunity you had to like freestyle like the track switcher, like, and you could make your own remix, like, shit was fresh.
I have a special memory of DJ Hero because it's because of DJ Hero that an incident happened wherein I, Russ Frostick, podcast fave, interviewed Jay-Z. It was me
what?
And Jay-Z in a room.
I had no idea.
Yeah, when I was working at MTV, MTV opens a lot of doors, and this one door opened, and there was Jay-Z. And I interviewed him for about 5 or 10 minutes.
How was
and
it?
And talked about video games. He was a super nice dude.
Was he a producer or anything on that?
Yeah, he was attached in some ridiculous way.
Activision was throwing like so many names on their games at that time. That was around, that was the time that, remember, they rented out the Staples Center because they had just, Infinity Ward had fallen apart.
I remember that.
So they threw like, they just threw
you think
so
that's
many
You think that's why
names.
They threw that party? Like, we're doing okay.
Well, it was a weird thing. That was where they didn't participate in E3, but they did that. It was weird. And they had this, what is it, 200-foot stripper pole?
Remember when Harmonix was making so much goddamn money that they got The Who to play a private show for them? I showed up to that not knowing what it was, and then they had a stage set up where you could play Rock Band like before the mystery artist went on, and I did a set with a few other game industry folks. I think Kyle Orland was among them, and I did Pump It Up. I think that was my go-to usually for Rock Band. And then afterwards, we went to the theater and the fucking Who came out, and it dawned on me retroactively. It's like, wait a minute. I opened for the Who. Think about it. Technically speaking.
I remember you were in the joystick chat room with all of us, like on your computer when the show started. We're like, who's the mystery guest? You're like, the Who, gotta go. And you just like disappear.
Dip.
Lovely memories.
So who's been playing?
You guys remember Tony Hawk Ride?
Oh, my
I don't
gosh.
Want to talk about it. The horror.
I can tell you about having to play Tony Hawk Ride in front of Tony Hawk and him being like, it's much easier than you're behaving. Like, it shouldn't be this hard.
Ugh. No, it shouldn't, like, Tony. Sorry, you're right, Tony. It shouldn't.
Correct, Tony. I bet it seems that way to you, Tony.
Yeah, I'm sorry I can't do a 900 kickflip, Tony.
Activision trotted around a small child to play that game in New York. I went to a press event, and there was a 7-year-old kid playing Tony Hawk's Ride, and they had us watch him play it, and then at the end of it, I was like, I like half applauded, because I didn't know what else to do. And he was like, yeah, I really kicked its butt, right?
Halftime, you guys, who's playing Call of Duty Ghosts?
I've played that whole thing, all of it, every little bit.
Let me tell you how far I got. What I did was, I was in a spaceship, and I was killing people in zero gravity, and then I was back on Earth.
Sounds pretty tight.
Got blown up with an earthquake weapon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I was in a dilapidated post-apocalyptic nightmare scape, and there were dudes everywhere, and they were shooting at me, and I was shooting at them, and tight. I got through. I did maybe 2 minutes of that. I thought, all right, I'm good.
Justin, we had a conversation about this before you went and played it, and I told you that you probably shouldn't because you'd sort of feel bad afterwards.
Yeah, I got as far as I could. I mean, I got through all the Black Ops' story.
Mm-hmm.
I really, it's baffling to me. If you're going to make this is not relevant to the point. I'm sure we want to talk about the game itself more, but if you have like the blank slate of basically just making a game where you're shooting people, and you know that it's like basically the most well-trod game territory of the decade, like, why wouldn't you make your hero like something internet? Like, why wouldn't you have like a minority of some sort, or like a speech impediment, or a really fat
well, you don't
dude,
know. He might
like
be
something.
A minority with a speech impediment because he never talks.
Well, I see his brother, and his brother's like the broiest white bro dude named Hesh ever.
So I'm called adoption.
Hesh. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe like that's the twist at the end I should wait for. And the camera pulls back, and it's a beautiful.
By the way, you're adopted.
By the way, this whole time you've been a beautiful black lesbian. Like,
I
wow.
love you, sis.
I love you, sis. You're my hero.
I want to share a moment that I had because I reviewed the game, and you can read my review on Polygon.com. The moment that sort of blew me away and told me, okay, they've officially run out of ideas, is. Well, there's two moments. One of them happens very late in the game. Do you think should I do a spoiler warning?
No, don't
spoil
it. Yeah, I don't care if the game is dog shit. Like, we still shouldn't spoil it.
Okay, this is more in the middle, and people are aware that this level, because it's in all the trailers, there's a level that takes place, it's scuba diving. You're scuba diving.
Oh, yeah, they
used
it for the E3 demo.
Yeah, they used it for the E3 demo. And the E3 demo was mercifully cut short, at least they cropped a chunk of it. You spend, no joke, 20 minutes floating around as other guys in scuba gear drop down from the surface of the water and shoot you with underwater machine guns. And they
have
frequently...
Have these fucks not seen Mythbusters?
That's a good point. Well, they're underwater because it's the future. So that's pretty
no,
clear.
No, I'm saying the bullets.
Oh, yeah. Well, the bullets
well,
are underwater
like disintegrate
bullets.
When you shoot them underwater.
Well, I mean, Griffin, did you miss the part where I said I was shooting dudes in a space? Like... That you guys couldn't, you guys are in the beautiful majesty of space, and I'm weightless, and you still couldn't make a game for 5 minutes and not. It's like a person with Tourette syndrome or something. Like, you just have, he's got to be shooting somebody, right? Like, can you not think of any other meaningful mechanical interaction with this world than like me putting a bullet in a fool?
But it's fucking
and, like,
Call of Duty. You're not gonna like. It's not like Mark Echo's getting up. Like, you're not going to, like, do some fucking spray paint on the moon or some shit. Like, you're going to shoot some dudes.
No, but I'm going to give you an example of a scene where they didn't do that, which was in Black Ops 1, where you walk into the, like, Pentagon, and you walk into an office, and fucking JFK's right there, and you're, like, meeting JFK, and that was an amazing moment. And there was no shooting in that moment. Boosh.
What drives me crazy about this series, and it happens with, like, Activision properties that are successful is they become wildly popular, and then it's like, that's not enough, and they're like, how can we make it even more broad? And they find like something even more generic, like, let's put it in the apocalyptic setting. Our market research says that would get us this many more million people. And then it just gets dumber and, like, just blander. I mean, it is beef cooked well done.
Let's get off the campaign, because nobody gives a fuck about that anyway.
Okay, let's talk about
that. I think my biggest disappointment is, one, they got rid of the Pick 10 system, which is the best system of that type for a shooter, I think, hands down.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that they didn't get rid of it so much as heavily alter it for the worse.
Because I just picked up Black Ops 2 to wet my palate a little bit, and, like, immediately I jumped right back into that system. Like, immediately, like, I haven't played it for a fucking year, and I picked it up, like, oh, yeah, I remember how this works, and I put together a new class, and, like, it's so easy and so, like, deep, and there's so many options, and it sounds like they've just, like, complicated it to a crazy extreme.
Yeah, there are still, I would say, it's still very deep, and there's still a ton of options, but it's, like, imagine, because it's not hard to imagine, because you literally do it the second you try to create a character, imagine staring at a screen with 35 different perks on it, each with their own point values, and trying to figure out, okay, I have 7 points to spend, I'm going to do a 2-point plus a 3-point plus a 2-point. And, like, why? Like, they just overcomplicated the whole thing.
I think also, I haven't heard that many people talk about it. I was really looking forward to the squad system, because I like a good bot-based multiplayer experience. One of my favorite, I think, shooting experiences of this generation was the Rainbow Six Vegas series and the terrorist hunt modes that they had. I spent a lot of time playing those, and I kind of had high hopes that squads would be that for Call of Duty, but Russ, you make it sound like it's not actually that shit hot.
Yeah, so they build this as, like, this new, brand new, huge aspect of the game, and it's essentially like you can do bot matches. Do you like fighting against bots?
I'm saying, though. I like bot matches. I like that Rainbow Six Vegas terrorist hunt style game.
Okay, but that's not what I'm talking about. So I agree with you. There's a mode called, I think it's called Safeguards in Ghosts, and it's essentially like Spec Ops Survival, where they, like, float in and you have to kill all of them. And that's fine. That's not terrible, but it's been in other Call of Duty games before. But most of Squads is not that. Most of Squads is like, it's you plus 9 bots versus 10 bots just doing the normal modes of Call of Duty, and it's not fun. Like, no one wants to play Call of Duty like that, unless you do.
Do you still get XP and shit like you would playing a normal game?
Yeah, but it's, like, less, I guess. It's just, like, does it matter? Do you think that's fun?
Like, XP? I like XP. I like experience points. I like ranking.
Yeah.
I like guns, and I like attachments, and I like ranks, and I like ranking through the ranks.
I know people don't like it when you say you don't like one of these games this year, and you like one of the other ones, but I've been hopping on that Battlefield 4 beat, and I've never gotten into Battlefield except for 1942.
Either.
Oh my gosh.
Is it good?
I don't, maybe I'm crazy, but I am, like, gone nuts. Like, I'm addicted to it.
I want that multiplayer.
So
that's what I'm saying. I want a multiplayer shooting experience where I can unlock guns and ranks and ranks and ranks.
And I've been playing without audio chat. Or voice chat?
Yeah, because you have no friends on PC.
Sure, but what I'm saying is, it's very much a team-based game, which was, like, a change for me from Call of Duty. And what was crazy was how easy it was to play and how a team dynamic naturally happened a lot of the time, even without voice, just because of the way the game is balanced. And if you're not really good at shooting people, there are a lot of things you can do to rank up that XP and kind of find a place for you. Like, I had to use the rocket launcher a lot because I'm not good, but people don't, like, trash talk you for it. Like, if you're the rocket launcher guy, you're incredibly valuable to your team because all the cover is destructible. So you become the person who basically is, like, blowing up the holes and making people vulnerable to the, like, sharpshooters.
Yeah, and there's also the what is it called? Shooting around people to, like, slow them down. Suppressive fire.
Yeah, you get rewards for
missing, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm going to pre-order this shit. Because I've been thinking about either do I want Ghost? Do I want BF4? Do I want Killzone Shadowfall? Like, I want some sort of multiplayer shooting.
I think what I'm going to go off of, having played Ghost, no part of me can recommend.
And it apparently has some issues on PS4. Yeah.
PS4, I definitely ran into some frame rate issues. Right now, my current plan, I haven't played a Battlefield on pretty much any platform, but right now my current plan is to get Battlefield on Xbox One, and so I have that like multiplayer game that like will fill up my Call of Duty need, and I'm hoping like the port is good. I have no idea if it is or not, but I don't have a $1 million PC that plays
how
awesome
many P's,
PC games.
How many P's are there? Because I've heard a lot of thing about Xbox One not having many P's.
Yeah, it seems.
Oh,
to be
I believe
the Battlefield. I've heard. I thought it had 1080p.
No. I think it's upscaled as well. But I would say
I think
here's
it's 900p's.
Well, the game people, itself is fun.
People
is
freak like, out about not only
I,
that,
but I don't give a fuck about fun. I just want the most
all the P's.
P's. Like if I know that someone else has more P's than I am than I have, then like, what's the fucking point?
You should get into PC gaming.
There's only one P in there.
Oh gosh. But yeah, I just to give you an idea of the craziness. I'm more about the game. So early on, I played the game called Don't Get Killed, which was just to stay alive as long as I could.
Yeah.
People got me in a helicopter because they could tell I was lost. Put me in a gunner thing, but I accidentally hit the button to jump out of the helicopter.
Perfect.
And I happened to be over the enemy base. So I realized people were shooting at me, so I couldn't pull my parachute until the very last second. But because I did that, it slung me directly into their building. So then I'm sprinting as people are shooting rockets at me, and I see an elevator, and I'm like, no way. It's a video game. That'll either be a load screen or inoperable. No, the elevator actually works. It takes me to the top of the skyscraper, and I start stabbing fools who are sniping on top of that.
Who doesn't love riding in elevators in video games?
It's great. It's great when there's an elevator that is actually a real elevator and not a load screen.
Let's get back to talking about memories.
Okay, memories.
Although I'm glad we've settled this, because I really was agonizing over what shooter I should.
You can be in my clan.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting on PS4, so I don't know if I'll have anybody to play.
No, that's a dumb idea.
Well, I'm not going to get an Xbox One for a while, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that's... Okay, also dumb. Okay, moving on. I hesitated sharing this idea, memory of mine, because it's kind of bittersweet when I look back at it. It was bittersweet at the time and continues to be. And it's probably the best moment I had, but also a depressing moment because... It's the moment when I finished Portal 2.
Mm.
And I remember very clearly, there's like, I'm not going to say what happens at the end because there's amazing things. And if you haven't, for some reason, played what I would argue to be the best game of this generation, you should damn well play it.
Oh, no.
But the moment it ends and the music is playing over the credits, all I can think of was, it will be a long fucking time before I play a game anywhere near this good. Maybe until the next Valve game, who knows when that's going to be. And it was just, like, so expertly, like, every aspect of it, from the game design to the writing to the co-op mode that I'm sure a lot of people never got around to playing, but it's equally amazing. It was just, like, this perfect, like, representation of what games can be and when games really nail something. And for it to be in a sequel, like... Games get a lot of shit for, like, bullshit sequels, like, you know, like, Ghost-level, like, half-ass sequels. But when a sequel comes out and trumps what was already a universally beloved game on every level, and not just from, like, six more guns.
That was kind of a weird game to sequelize upon. Because, and I know I'm getting into, like, bullshit gamer semantics now, but, like... Portal launched in the orange box. A lot of people, when it came out in orange box, sort of thought of it as like this sort of weird appendage to the Half-Life games that were in that box. Almost like sort of like a mini game on the side, even though it was a lot more than that.
I don't think anyone bought the orange box for Portal.
No, I don't think so either. But it was incredibly short. I think I beat it like in 2 hours my first time through, which sort of backed up that way of thinking. So like to say that this game is a sequel to that, like it's so much bigger, and the ideas are so much more fully realized, and the puzzles are so much more clever in every single way. that, I don't know, it's weird to say, like, it's like this thing, but better, like, because of course it is. It's almost like it's this thing, but an actual fully fledged game this time around.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It definitely felt like it was, the first game was more of an experiment. Yeah. And an idea, and this is what a game of this could look like. Yeah, I played co-op with you.
Yeah, and I was really good at it.
Debatable. But they were just amazing moments in the co-op that I don't think I've ever had in a game before or since, where you're just like standing there, you're a robot, your friend's a robot, you're like both seeing each other like look around these rooms. And then these, like, you'll hear, like, the other person be like, wait, let me just try this thing. And then they'll run off and do something crazy. And then they'll, like, fly through the screen, and you have no idea what just happened. And suddenly, like, everything will flip, and you'll know exactly how to solve the puzzle. Like,
I think we're about to talk about the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. You go, and we'll see.
The air high five. Like,
yeah, the air high five.
Everybody remembers who played that game, the co-op mode, will remember this singular puzzle for the rest of their lives because of how fucking good it was. And I don't want to describe it in case people haven't played it yet, but if you have, like, you know what I'm talking about. I think you actually get an achievement for it called Air 5. it's so good, and it realized so many different aspects of what the Portal puzzle mechanic was sort of capable of. And it solidified it into this singular moment that when I played it with one of the guys I worked with at Joystick, like, we just, like, cracked up laughing, like, holy shit, I can't believe that was the solution to that puzzle.
I think is also so great about that multiplayer is a room can take you, you know, 15 or 20 minutes to solve. It's very tough. But once you know how to do it, it only takes a few seconds, which allows for you to troll your friends and not, like, feel bad about it. Like, we gave each other so much grief while playing that game, but the game doesn't make that a penalty. It doesn't take lives. You don't really lose a ton of time doing it because it's something to do to kind of like stop thinking about the puzzles and like kind of it adds its own levity, which is perfect because it's already a funny game. Yeah, that game is pretty great.
Yeah, I miss it.
I do too.
So here is my best memory of this generation is actually pretty early. The year would have been 2006, and I was working at a newspaper in the south of Ohio called the Ironton Tribune, and wasn't writing about games, wasn't doing any of that, and as it happened, sort of by happenstance, I didn't have a 360 yet, and on the year anniversary of the day our Griffin and Mai's mom passed away, it was a year to the day, it was May 21st, 2006, we were all sitting around my apartment, which was pretty close to the house at the time, and sort of spur of the moment decided that, you know what, we're going to go buy an Xbox 360. And we spent the rest of that day playing with everything and goofing around on it and distracting ourselves and you know, trying out whatever games we had lying around. I think putting in Xbox One or original Xbox games to see if they worked. And about 2 months after that, I was supposed to get married July 1st of 2006. And my wife and I were going to move out of the our respective places and move into, you know, a new house together. And the month before the wedding, our lease expired at our old place. So we decided that for that month, we would live, you know, separately until we moved in together. So for a month between the month of June in 2006, which was right after I got the 360, I played an amount of Elder Scrolls Oblivion with my brothers there. I think we were swapping controller and each having our own campaign. But that month, we had like turned our dining room into basically just a cave. where us three and our dad, like, were taking turns playing through Skyrim. Yeah, or sorry, Oblivion. Each of us with our own character, you know, our own approach to it. But for a month, we basically just locked ourselves in this world, and it was still kind of a weird transitional period for us as a family, I guess, still kind of figuring things out. And it was right before I was sort of, you know, going to start this whole new thing. But for a month, we did nothing but play Oblivion. And I cite it pretty frequently as, like, my favorite game ever. And I think it's because of that. Like, for a month, I was not only able to sort of lose myself in this huge, vast world that absolutely would not have been possible on the previous generation of consoles, but I was able to sort of bond with them more over this game, and each of us sort of watching each other and having our own individual experiences. And for me, when I'm thinking about video games now, it's really hard for anything else to stack up to that. And because of that, that experience, I think, was what galvanized me to want to write about games professionally. And less than a year after that, I was at Joystick. So that's my favorite memory of this generation.
I don't really remember that, because I was, like, at that period, I was too busy, like, getting girlfriends and kissing
girls and
kissing them and stuff.
Yeah, getting babes.
That was like 2006 was, like, a really good year for me.
Babe wise, yeah.
You really hit
your apex.
I remember that, and that was like, that was we have all four of us always played games together, I think, coming up. Maybe less now that we live in different places, but, like, and sometimes to a negative degree. I remember still the screaming arguments that we had over EverQuest, because either one of the four of us wanted to play and on the one computer and the, like, 56K modem or shittier modem that we were running at that time, or our mom wanted to make a phone call or something like that, which was, like, would kick us right off. But that period, I feel like there wasn't really any of that, because that game and that series has always been so good about it really was a different game for all four of us. So it could be this communal single-player experience where it's like Travis would go through the game stealing every fucking thing that there was, and Dad would play as this huge Conan the Barbarian type motherfucker, and, like, you were this foppish enchanter that could solve puzzles with magic. Like, I don't know, there really aren't that many game franchises like that I would, like, watch somebody else play.
Dad was the worst, because our dad would systematically pick up everything in a room, like, no matter how, like, how dumb or useless it was. Like, if it was a fork, he picked it up. A plate, he picked it up. He picked up everything in the room, and he would become incredibly encumbered and then insist on walking to the nearest shop to sell everything. And you would have to watch him, like, fucking lumber the miles to the nearest shop just so he could sell off and make whatever dumb copper that he was going to make from selling that person's vase.
I think part of it was also the magic of, like you said, like, that there weren't that many games when it first launched that you were like, there's no way they could have done this on the original Xbox. But even Morrowind, like, didn't even fucking come close. Like, it was such a crazy marked improvement. Man, now I want to play Skyrim again. God damn it. God damn your happy memories.
That was nice. That was a really nice, that was a nice story. It was a nice episode. I enjoyed that.
I'm like, sad. I'm, like, reminiscing about the generation now, and I, like, had no emotional connection to it, like, an hour ago.
It's, you know, it's funny because it's hard for me to think outside of this generation because, like, for me, at least, like, this has been my entire professional career. Yeah. Like, I've only covered these consoles, and, like, and you get such a different relationship with video games when you start doing it professionally, and it really sort of, like, you know, your it changes your relationship in a really profound way. And it's weird for me to think about, you know, not covering these boxes, because, like, this has been sort of my entire professional life has been this generation.
It's also been different in, like, the way that I play games, because the way I play games now is completely different from the way I was playing games in, what, fucking 2004? Like, 9 years ago? I would sit down in a room with my PlayStation and just poop sock all four discs of whatever Japanese role-playing game I was playing over the course of 2 weeks, and it would be literally all that I do. And, like, God, if that was the way that I played games in this current generation, I would have fucking died. Because there's so many games like that. Like, I could only play Skyrim for a couple hours at a time and then have to put it down. But, like, if Skyrim had come out when I was 13 years old, like, that is all that I would have done. I don't know, it's weird, not only how things have changed since I started writing about them, but just, like, I don't know, I'm getting married in a month. Like, my gaming time is, and the way that I consume them is less fanatical, I think.
Oh. Can I ask you guys an honest-to-God question?
Sure. Because
we're like, I feel like we're in the honesty tree right now.
We are.
Are you guys really, like, are you guys excited? I mean, are you guys, like, super excited in the way that one would expect if, like, two video game consoles were coming out within about a week of each other?
No.
I am, but it's for a different reason.
Wait, what? One at a time. Let's go with Russ first, because he answered
first. Okay. So, I mean, I just talked about this on Friends List, but I'll reiterate. I mean, with both consoles, I mean, just on a software side, just in terms of the games that are coming out, it's not like there is literally nothing close to a must-have piece of software coming out on either of these consoles. The closest thing is, I would say, Titanfall on Xbox and Infamous on PS4, and neither of those come out until Q1 of next year. So on that aspect, no, I'm not, like, losing my mind excited, but there is a lot of excitement that I get out of just, like, drumming through, it's weird, but, like, just drumming through the menus and, like, understanding the new features and just learning, like, cool things you can do with these new consoles that, like, I currently have no idea. I'm also super excited to never use the PS3 controller again. Like, so there are aspects that I'm excited about.
Griff, what about you? You excited? You pumped?
It's hard for me to have any kind of anything to compare it to, right? Because you just described my entry into the current generation is when you bought that Xbox 360 on a lark. And until that point, like, I hadn't thought about doing it because, like, I don't think I had a job at that time, or maybe I was working at TCBY, not, like, earning Xbox 360 bucks. So, like, the prospect of buying a console at launch has never really been a possibility for me, save for when the Wii launched. I was working at GameStop, and I had one reserved from the GameStop I was working at. And, like, that was pretty exciting for me. But it's hard to compare that because it was such a sea change. I'm a little... My expectations are tempered because of the software that's coming out, because, like Russ said, like, there really isn't any first-party stuff that's got me super psyched right now. But I'm excited to have, like, new shit. Like, I'm excited for it to be here and for me to put my hands on it, which I know is a completely superficial reason to be excited to, you know, I'm looking forward to buying something, but, I mean, it's kind of true. That's kind of where my head's at, and I think that's, like, I don't know. I think that's just a general tech enthusiast thing more than it is a gamer thing.
Yeah. I'm excited just because a refresh means that all these companies can kind of readjust their entire strategies to the way people play video games now. Like, I think, you know, making it easier for indie games to be available to a larger group of people, like, learning from your mistakes and how you promote them. But even things like how Xbox wants to incorporate non-gaming stuff into the system, like Frush saw the split-screen thing where you can have the TV on. This idea of, you know, Kinect actually being used as a communication device where I can have Kinect or Skype video chat on while playing a video game, which I don't even know if that's a real thing, but I'm just saying...
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
You can just do voice Skype while playing a video game.
But, I'm excited to see how things evolve over the course of this generation and how I can live my life as an adult and incorporate games into my life in maybe a healthier way or a way that is, you know, more communicative with people that I want to be talking with while playing games. I think just that's what I'm most excited about, is to see the new ways we play games this generation, because we don't know what that is, right? We don't know what the Rock Band is or the Dance Central is or... what the big thing is yet, because it's just so early on.
I think it's going to be a first-person shooter.
Yeah, the good thing is I think that really – I think that is kind of running its course more than I thought it would.
Yeah,
I think we are about to see something new.
Yeah, I would love to see something new.
So, yeah, I'm happy just because I think it's a chance for people to, you know, try new things. And all the new IPs that all the publishers are working on, that's I think that's what's exciting.
Justin, what about you?
I think I'm probably closest to Russ on the spectrum. Actually, I'm weirdly like it's kind of throwing me how close they're coming out together. I almost wish they were spaced out a little bit because it almost feels like an embarrassment of riches. Like I won't really be able to dig into either one enough. I do think it's a really big missed opportunity to, and maybe they had this, so it's hard to say in hindsight, but it's weird that with as much lead up as they had to this console, as much of a runway they had to these consoles, there isn't like a big launch game that you have to own. And I know that that's, you know,
that's par for the course though.
It is par for the course, but I'm saying like as long as we had to wait for this generation, it seems weird that and as much as these two are going to be in direct competition with each other in a way that we haven't seen before, it's weird that one of them didn't want to come out with something huge, you know, well, something you had to have.
It's a business strategy more than anything, right? Because they don't need, I mean, it helps, but they don't need Infamous and Titanfall to come out this year to
sell all the units that are going to be on the shelf.
Yeah, they're going to sell. They're going to sell all the units that they put on the shelves for the holiday season because that's how holidays works. And typically, you hit that lull right around January, and so they have a game coming in February and a game coming in March that's going to keep things going. And then hopefully in the summer months they'll be able to keep it going. But you look at the Wii U sold 3 million units from its launch to the end of the year in like a month and a half, which is crazy good. And then nothing fucking came out for like 7 months, and
yeah,
then
that's fair. And I guess you don't want to sink a lot of resources into a game when the install base isn't there yet. I mean, they're going to sell a lot more. The install base for Titanfall, for example, is going to be a hell of a lot bigger, you know, in March than it will be.
More importantly, though, it's going to keep. Nintendo has only sold, I don't even think they've sold an extra million on top of the 3 million they sold in the first month and a half, because of how slow the software lineup was coming out, and now they have this like 3 or 4 month booster shot to like keep shit rolling. I think next spring is going to be pretty dope because by that time we'll have those games, we'll have more indie game adoption. Fucking Octodad will be out. You know him to be on top of that shit.
Yeah, like,
I think next spring is going to be a lot healthier time to pick up one of these things. but I'm excited to be an early adopter because I haven't had that in a long time.
The only thing weird with the indie thing is it is so strange seeing all these games out on PC or out first on PC for the PlayStation. Like, and they don't run on like super powerful things either. So that's the only thing that kind of bums me about my PS4. Like, I was very excited about it at E3, and now I'm just kind of like, well, I played a lot of this stuff.
Everything though. That's not like Octodad and Helljumpers. Like, those games are exclusives.
No, I don't think Octodad is. I'm pretty sure it's PC, and I'm pretty sure it was designed for PC. And I think it's designed to be on PC. Like the better controls for PC too, I think. Maybe that was a
long time
ago.
Did you say PC too? Do you know something I don't?
No. I'm so sorry.
Embargo breaker. You're not supposed to talk about the PC 2 yet.
I just remember a long time ago when they were like, yeah, this game was made for
I think PC that one. I think I was wrong. Yeah, but I mean, Housemarque's games like Resogun, like there's definitely some games like that.
For sure.
Contrast coming to PC 2?
I believe so.
Let's just hang out in the sad realization that Microsoft and Sony might think that Rise and Killzone are these games.
I haven't played the rest of Killzone. That multiplayer is actually pretty fun.
Guys, do you know what makes me happy, though, is, and I know we already trashed shooters at the end of that thing, Titanfall is the real deal. That game, man, that Rise is without question the worst demo of a major game I've ever played at a press conference. Titanfall is the...
Cool. I know we are like wandering way off the fucking track right now. But
yeah.
Did I ever talk about my experience playing that game at the Tokyo Game Show? Because it's really quite magical.
I would love to hear this. I don't
think so. Yeah, tell me.
It was the first time I played the game. Like, every time I go to events, I very rarely indulge myself in, like, seeing shit that I want to see that I'm not, like, on the books to see, that I don't, like, have scheduled appointments for. Usually I just go see the shit I'm scheduled to see, and then I go back to the hotel and write it up as quick as I possibly can because I'm, you know, a hard, diligent worker. But at the Tokyo Game Show, I was like, fuck it, I'm going to see Titanfall. I don't care how long I have to wait, which is good because I had to wait, like, an hour and a half. Don't tell Brian. In line to play it. And so I waited an hour and a half, and I finally got to play it. I was like, here we fucking go. Titanfall time, baby. And the group of Japanese businessmen I was playing with on my team didn't know that you could summon mechs from the sky to climb inside and fight alongside at your will. I was the only person who exercised that particular option. So this 15-minute demo that I just watched everybody else play lasted maybe 4.5 minutes for me. Because our team got fucking shad-racked. Sure. It was brutal. And then at the end of every match, you have this opportunity to escape if you lose, where you have to get to this helicopter before you get fucking so murked. And, like, they were just like standing around. I was like, come on, bodies guys, falling we have to you. Get to the chopper. Fucking follow me.
They didn't learn Japanese for get to the chopper.
They were just getting stepped on. I was just yelling, Hajime Mashite, which means nice to meet you, because that's the only thing I do.
This has been the Besties, where we said goodbye to this console generation. Next week, we'll be in a sort of a bizarre state of flux as we... you know, prepare for the next generation, but we'll be on the cusp. We'll be on the very edge of it. I still don't know.
Well, probably the best
I'm going to get with my PS4. I don't know.
Get Battlefield 4. Let's get dirty with it.
No.
You know what? I might get dirty with Battlefield 4, Griffin. That seems like a pretty good
idea. Picking up AC4 too, we can stab some Abstergo creeps.
I need to get. Wait, so you're going to get AC4 for the PS4?
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
I think I might get that Need for Speed too. It's looking nice.
Really?
Deep coffers. Over
there. I want it to be good.
Cuss a Griffin.
Think about Mac too. Think about Super Nintendo Mac's competitive multiplayer.
So I do want to mention before we wrap the show up that at noon next Wednesday,
noon Eastern.
Thank you. At noon Eastern next Wednesday, which is the 13th, I believe.
Yeah.
We are going to be doing a massive, enormous 12-hour-long PS4 live stream. 12 hours of
PS4. You don't have to watch all of it. You only have to watch as much as you want to watch.
But if you do not watch all of it, I will be very hurt. We're going to be having special guests on. We're going to be playing through all the launch games. We're going to be talking about certain features. If you are sitting at work with nothing to do next Wednesday,
for 12 hours, if you're working a 24-hour day at work.
Yes. I pity you, but also we're going to be doing this. We'll be doing the same, you know, we don't want to think we're impartial. We'll be doing the same thing for Xbox when it launches. So get pumped and tune in.
And that's going to do it for us here on the Besties. Make sure you join us again next Friday. Until then, more stuff on Polygon, like Russ said, the big live stream Wednesday at noon. So much more coming out in the next couple of weeks. So it's going to be huge. Stick with us, and stick with us, your pals, the Besties. Every Friday, we're right here, and we hope
for at least five too. For at least five more Fridays.
At least five more Fridays, we will be here. Until then, I'm Justin McRoy.
I'm Griffin McRoy. We haven't done a sign.
I'm Christopher Plant.
And I'm Ross Frushnick. We never do this.
Together, we're the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best thing?
Besties!